Well, hello everybody. Welcome to Drive to Win. I'm Justin Bell, your host, and we are here in the Wynn Las Vegas. And of course, the show is brought to you by Mobile One for the love of driving. Well, what a crazy weekend that is. It was spectacular to watch the Grand Prix from the Red Bull Ring in Austria. So much going on. It definitely made for one heck of a barnstormer in so many ways. You know, normally I talk for quite a bit at the beginning of the show. Well, I thought, let's bring on the man that was on the ground, Will Buxton. He's been a guest on the show before, and we're going to dig deep into all those storylines. I cannot wait. Now, of course, Red Bull Ring is just a total exhibition from the start of the weekend to the end of that Red Bull universe. They have the stunt helicopters. They have jets going by with biplanes. It's quite extraordinary. And they lay on the ultimate festival for the fans. Of course, it's all about Red Bull there in every way. And they were certainly expecting a Max Verstappen domination, as always. But by the time you watch this, everybody knows what happens. And so we're going to get into that with Will in a few minutes. But first, here at the Wynn Las Vegas, we're definitely getting into the racy spirit, especially when it comes to the Las Vegas Concours, which is right around the corner. Yes, that's right. The Las Vegas Concours is back for 2024. One of the world's most prestigious automotive events takes place November 1st through the 3rd at the Wynn Golf Club, right here at the Wynn Las Vegas. It's a one-of-a-kind, immersive experience. The Las Vegas Concours is an exhibition featuring more than 250 distinctive automobiles from around the world, paying homage to remarkable cars of the past, present, and future. Believe me, I've seen the list. They're going to be incredible. It's a celebration of heritage, craftsmanship, and innovation. The Las Vegas Concours at the Wynn Las Vegas brings car enthusiasts from all corners of the globe to revel in automotive excellence, all against the dynamic backdrop of the Las Vegas Strip. And who will you find emceeing and hosting the event? Well, of course, that is me. So come and say hi this November. For more information regarding recently added rooms and packages, you can visit lasvegasconcours.com. That's lasvegasconcours.com. Now it's time to bring in our esteemed guest. He's hot off the press from the Red Bull Ring. Will Buxton, definitely one of the top presenters for F1. Will definitely served his time in the junior Formulae, but he had a fast rise to the top. He was lucky enough to catch the end of the Speed Channel broadcast of F1, which definitely put him on the map. And then he joined NBC as a pit lane reporter for IndyCar. He rejoined Formula One just in time for the meteoric success of Drive to Survive. And in my opinion, he perfectly captures the new version of Formula One for the modern audience. His new book is coming out in August called Grand Prix, an illustrated history of Formula One, and all signs are indicating that it's going to be the best book ever written about the sport. Will, I'm so excited, mate, to have you back on the show. How are things going?
Mate, you've caught me on a rare day at home.
I'm sure the wife and kids are just overjoyed that you're doing yet another podcast and another chat.
You've got me out of tea time, so it's all good. I'm going to have to make up for it. I'm on bath and bed duty, so it's cool.
Well, listen, I so much went on at the weekend. It was a wild race. It sounds weird, but I thought of you on Sunday morning as I was sitting there in my underwear with a coffee in my hand watching the Grand Prix, and I thought, I can't wait to talk with Will Buxton about what went on. And I mean, a truly wild ride, and I know we're going to get to the accident a bit later, but the whole weekend was on fire, really, wasn't it?
I think the whole last four or five races have really been on fire. I think we're really lucky with where Formula One is at right now. You know, we've got this competitive convergence where Red Bull no longer has the dominant car, where McLaren arguably has the faster car. Certainly that's Red Bull's opinion right now. Mercedes have had their eureka moment. Ferrari have had a couple of off races, but they're there or thereabouts. It's properly on. And I love it. And you know, I think Austria being a sprint weekend, we were hoping for more of the same. We got it in the sprint. We got a really close run thing between Lando and Max in the early laps, and then Oscar nipped through and couldn't quite keep up that same kind of pressure on Max, and we lost any chance of them coming back at the end of the stint in the sprint. And then what Max did in qualifying just took everyone's breath away. And I think at that point we thought, right, well, Grand Prix's done.
You thought it was back to business as usual. There he is. I mean, how are you 8 tenths quicker on a track that's that short? And I mean, it was just, sublime. I bet the whole press room was just like, oh, crap.
Yeah, I mean, he was 8, 9 tenths over Checo, but Checo was running old tires and Max was on new because they needed to use all the tires to get Checo through to Q3. But still, what, nearly four tenths or maybe over 4 tenths over Lando. When in Q1 was the closest Q1 in history. Everybody within 0.89, I think, of the P1 time, 0.4 covered the top 15 drivers. And then you get to Q3, and that's the gap between Max and P2. It was a stunning lap. It was a sensational run from him. And so then you're left with the question of, okay, because it's a sprint weekend. We've had sprint qualifying, we've had sprint. Then the guys can go away and make changes to the car. So how much is this McLaren finding an edge? How much is it Max actually putting together the complete lap that he hadn't put together on Friday? How much is it McLaren making a change that takes them away from the quali competitiveness and maybe put something in their basket for Sunday? And all of these unknowns, I think, started to look like they were knowns as soon as the race started and Max just pulled out this 8-second lead and looked like he was never going to get touched. And then the second pit stop happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've got a race.
Yeah. I was thinking about it when you're on the grid. You're so right. All those elements, and we're only privy to our preconceptions, right? And the data that you guys are getting and everything. And there was that you said on the broadcast that McLaren, you felt that they were less focused on the qualifying and more focused on getting their car ready for the race. Because it does look like whatever those upgrades were they bought to the car a few races ago, the car comes alive as the tanks get lighter. Would I be correct in that?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And also, their ability to have bite in the tyres at the start of the stint, but then also look after their tyres such that when the stint gets towards its natural conclusion, not only can they lengthen their stint if they need to, but that's when they begin to get the bite back in the tyre. And you see, the conclusion of the last few races, Lando just getting closer and closer and closer and closer. And you just think, just give us a couple more laps and let's have a fight. And I think that's what everybody was really looking forward to over the last few races and has seen over the last few races. But everyone was hoping for in Austria was to see the fight, was to see Max taking it to Lando and Lando taking it to Max, because these two they're great friends. They're both that same generation. And it feels like this season anyway, there's that slight change where, Max is the champion. Lando is the man that wants his crown, has the hunger for it. McLaren not quite believing that they're there, not quite believing that they're in the championship fight. I spoke to Andrea Stella on Saturday afternoon before qualifying, and I said, why did you let Oscar get past Lando in the sprint? Why didn't you say, just hold position, kid, until Lando's had a go and maybe even got past, and then you have your go? Red Bull are ruthless. They put all their eggs in Max's basket. Why aren't you doing the same with Lando? Because you're in the mix. And Andrea said, we'll think about that in time, which made me think that they weren't yet in that mindset of, oh, you know what, we might actually be in the championship hunt. Because if they were, would they have made that decision? But I think that's what everyone was hoping for from the race. And from every race that we have now for the rest of the season, it's going to be these two guys. And it reminds me of 21, but it's not Max who is the challenger. It's not Max who is the coming man trying to dethrone the champion. Max is now the champion and Lando's trying to dethrone him. And it's great. It's what everyone's been hoping and praying for the last few years.
When you look at that opening lap, especially, and you see how spirited everybody is on that opening lap, and I thought it was a great opening lap by everybody, right? And you've got overtakes, it was, George overtaking, Carlos overtaking, and then getting re-overtaken. I mean, just really, really dynamic. You know that everyone's positioning behind Max for exactly kind of what eventually happened later in the race. it does seem to me that on that opening salvo, if you like, obviously track position on in Austria is as important as almost a street circuit. And it is it just everything's distilled at that track? Every your start, the run to the first corner, that long DRS run up to the second, third corner, everything seems just more intense there because it's such a short track. Does that allow it to be a great indicator of the racing that we got to come?
I think the better indicator is the fact that we've had so many different styles of track over the last four or five races. And with each of those races, it's been a closely fought contest. And whether it's the battle for pole and the fact that, you know, we got to Austria and we had four different teams on pole within the last four races. We've had four teams now winning Grand Prix this season. That is, I think, is hugely positive. The fact that the Mercedes looks like it is a car for all circuits in all conditions. The fact that Red Bull made mistakes in their pit stop when normally they're perfect. All of these little things that maybe the chinks in the Red Bull armor, the increasing competitiveness and perfection of McLaren, the increasing competitiveness of Mercedes, that I think is more positive than any individual result at any individual track. You know, Barcelona should be the great barometer of where we're at traditionally in terms of the cars. But we know that the championship has moved away from those traditional circuits towards more kind of street tracks. I think we're in for a great second half of the season. I really do. I can't wait for Silverstone this weekend because, you know, the medium to high speed stuff that you have at Austria is very similar to what we have at Silverstone. There are, you know, the slow speed stuff at the start of the lap, and then it's all, you know, no braking until you get back to Vail and Abbey at the end of the lap. So I can't wait, mate. I can't wait for Silverstone. I think it's going to be round two of what we saw in Austria.
I agree. So we've got McLaren and Max, the Red Bull, doing what they're doing up at the front. And then behind with Mercedes and Ferrari so similar on pace. Carlos was right up there, you know, inherited the podium, but it's very interesting to, as you say, the lap times were so close. When you're watching those cars, can you see the difference? Can you just, is it visible to see the difference? And where is it between those first two, three cars and the next four cars? Where do you see it as someone with your trained eye?
It's like the mad thing now is we're dealing with thousands of a second.
Yeah.
You know, we got the top three, top four cars covered by half a tenth. I don't think I can recall it being this close. And that's why it comes down to the really fine details. And, you know, you saw it in Austria. Lando had the advantage through turn one, turn three. But then kind of from four or really five onwards, Max just owned the track. So Lando was making up all his time in the first third of the track. Max was making it up through the second two sectors. And that's great. When you have a situation like that, that's fun. You know, when you get to a track like Spa, that's really great. When, you know, when sector one and three are very similar and then sector two benefits somebody else, you tend to get a good race when you get to a circuit like that. So I'm excited for those, mate. But in terms of actually being able to see it, it's mostly now, I think, in the overall comfort level inside the car. So it's watching the driver inputs, watching the steering wheel inputs and seeing what they're doing and seeing how smooth somebody is or how much they're actually fighting it. And again, it's nuances, it's minutiae, it's nothing. It's incredible. It's so close.
Here's a question for you about just that attitude at the beginning of the race. Have you noticed with this increased pressure on Max that there's a different energy on the start line? I love your grid walks, mate. I love the way you're doing it. And you get, and of course, the drivers aren't really out at that moment when you did your walk in Austria. But when the cameras go off and you watch what they're doing, getting ready to get in the car, is there a shift in Max's attitude? Can you see Lando getting a bit more confident knowing he's there? I mean, does it extend all the way from the press room to the grid?
I think Lando's demeanor has changed since the win. I really think his demeanor has changed since the win. There is a confidence there that your first win will always provide. And maybe the frustration that had existed in him has started to dissipate a bit. Max is cool. Like he is the coolest customer in the world. If anything is phasing him or if anything is bothering him, you don't see it. You know, the whole weekend we were hearing about Jos Verstappen versus Christian Horner and the arguments going on behind the scenes at Red Bull there, and Christian had to confront those stories during the press conference. You know, and he even joked, you know, if Mercedes want a Verstappen, they're very welcome to take Jos. when your dad is in a war of words with your team boss, yeah, does that affect you? I don't know. Max seems to have this incredible ability to just drown out the noise and focus on himself and what he has to do. And that's something which became very apparent over the last couple of seasons since the end of 2021, really been able to just drown all of that out. And I think that's been one of his most impressive facets.
Well, thanks for that little insight. Something that we talk about, Jeremiah, my producer and I, quite a bit, is on the tire choice for the races. Now, this track seemed a little bit more obvious, but we see some really interesting split strategies. You know, like in Barcelona, you know, George going with, I think it was hard, medium, hard, right? And signs
yeah,
the
going
same.
With the hard at the end.
But why was
it? It made no sense to go on the hard at the end.
Right?
It made no sense.
I mean, you're sitting in the
really
driver's
meeting.
Yeah, can you imagine sitting in the driver's meeting with your team and they're going, okay, so Lewis, you're going to go with, you know, you're going to be on softs at the end or mediums or whatever, and George, you're going to be on hards. I'd be like, what the heck are you talking about?
They're making that. Obviously, the decisions are taken before the race, but then you're also reacting on the fly to what the degradation is doing. And, you know, the temperatures were incredibly high in Barcelona on race day, and I think the deck was kicking in at a rate that they weren't expecting to see. And so very often you can be left without the tyre that might be the preferable tyre. As we saw in Austria, Max had to move on to a used set of mediums for the last stint, whereas Lando had a new set of mediums, just through the necessity of what the strategy ended up being and what their pace ended up being. So you can be Red Bull, you can be perfect and still get left flat-footed if the temperature carries on increasing and the deg is going through the roof in a way that wasn't anticipated. And that's particularly so on a sprint weekend when you only get that one practice session to figure out, you know, what you're doing for the remainder of the weekend. But I will say one thing that's fascinating is usually in the final practice session, Aston Martin will always scrub their race tires. So they'll take the fresh, shiny tires. They'll put one lap on each of the tires that they're going to use in the Grand Prix. So in FP1 in Austria, because it was a sprint weekend, the very first thing they did was they scrubbed their mediums and their hards. So they already knew by the time they got there what their race strategy was.
Okay.
Didn't matter about practice, didn't matter about the temperature. Like, they knew what their race strategy was by the time they already got there. So that's how far ahead the strategists are thinking and have the knowledge of these places.
Yeah, it's, you get to see that, you know, it's like being at a football game. If you're not there live, you can't see the peripheral things going. We just see what's coming down the tube. The time management definitely is something that is of frustration, and if you sit there with a timing and scoring chart like I do, because as you know, it makes our racing more fun to watch, doesn't it? If you know what you're looking for and you watch the lap times. I think if the general public were truly aware of the lap times that they run in those middle stints, it's like playing soccer and then saying, okay guys, you're only allowed to jog around the field, you're not allowed to sprint. You know, especially when you can have the backmarking car going faster lap times than the leading car just because of the tire deg, because of tire management.
Yeah.
How frustrating is that? Because these cars, these five or six, seven seconds off qualifying pace sometimes, that is a different animal. Will, I challenge that, you know, you're a pretty decent shoe, so am I. We wouldn't, if you put us in a sports car, a touring car, we wouldn't be 7 seconds off the pace on a bad day. You know, so
I don't know. You might not be. I probably would be.
Okay. Well, but you know what I'm trying to say. You know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that's a crazy amount of time off the optimal performance of these cars.
But it's a different mindset. And I think, you know, the category being what it is now and the knowledge of how you have to use the tires means it's, you know, at times it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, you have to learn how to conserve, learn how to use the tires. And this has been the way, you know, going all the way back to when Pirelli first started in Formula One. And I remember I was talking to Ruth Buscombe about this in Barcelona, because we were talking about, you know, was it going to be two stops? Was it going to be three stops? And then Ruth was like, oh, maybe four, because that's the strategy that she employed with Fernando way back at the start of the Pirelli era, when everyone thought you've got to conserve. And Ferrari just went, and Ruth was part of the strategy team in those days at Ferrari, and she was part of the team that decided to just go, nah, you know what, screw it, we're going to do one extra stop, and we're just going to send Fernando out on push laps every single lap. And he did. He basically did quali laps for the whole Grand Prix, did four pit stops and won the race before anybody had a chance to figure out what he was doing. It was amazing. You know, ultimately, we'd all love to see super soft, sticky qualifying tires and a race where you go out and you push every lap to the absolute limit. But that's not kind of the way that the sport is at the moment. And so you have to race within the parameters of what the sport is. And it's given us some great races this season. You know, last four or five Grand Prix have been absolutely brilliant, and all of them building in that kind of strategic crescendo towards those last 10 laps when, bam, you have your fight and it's on. And I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. It's a bit like Indy, isn't it? You know, that middle phase, everyone is strategizing, and you're back timing, the strategists are back timing to that last 30 laps. And then the last 20,
who's
and the
on
last
strategy
10.
A, who's on strategy B? Yeah. You know, like, you've got to kind of figure out who's going to be where on fuel for the last 25 laps. And yeah, totally, mate. It's exactly like that.
Yeah, which it does, as you say, open up some great racing. Talking about great racing, the Alpine battle was fun seeing those two. And you know, I thought they were going to be the disaster zone, right? I'm sure Bruno Fannin was going, whoa, no, not again. But they raced so cleanly. It shows it can be done, even against two guys that don't get on that well. You're pretty sporty. It must have been pretty fun to watch live from the pit lane.
Oh, it was great. So I love the fight between two Haas cars, and I love the fight between the two Alpines. I love it when teammates go wheel to wheel and it gets a bit dicey. Like with George and Lewis at the start as well. That got a bit dicey for a few laps. I love that, just because you can imagine the team principal getting all puckered up on the pit wall. Really fun. And you know, Esteban's got nothing to lose at the moment. He's done. Pierre's just signed a new deal. So go for it. I love it. And as you say, clean, possibly not entirely respectful between those two, but clean and really enjoyable. And that's the great thing about that track is, and it's also what I really enjoyed about the sprint as well, because I know we're going to get on to talking about Max and Lando. But there was some great racing in the sprint, as there was in the Grand Prix. You know, you get the move done on three, you get the run down to four, and whether you try to go for the inside or the outside, there's an opportunity. Then there's a chance to get a switch back again at five. So I think it's a track that really lends itself to one move not necessarily being resolved until kind of three, four corners later. And that's one of the reasons I love that track. I mean, you know, Oscar pulling his moves around the outside at five, six, you know, around that little sequence, just absolutely, absolutely breathtaking.
Before we move on to that the accident incident, talk about Oscar quickly. He has that ability to focus, right? He has an unflappable nature. Something tells me you see him execute his moves with a ruthlessness. It's a very decisive way he goes about it. Obviously still learning some racecraft as the, you know, the junior member of the squad. But when he comes of age, is he going to be a real problem for Lando? Because Lando's an emotional kid. I don't think Oscar's burdened with that.
I think that Oscar has potential to be really, really good. Once he gets his race pace and his race management and tire management, gets on top of all of that, and he's so much better this year than he was last year. Once he gets all of that worked out, there'll be no stopping him. I think he's absolutely phenomenal. And as you say, that racecraft, those instinctive outside moves were so desperately impressive in Austria. I absolutely adored that. You know, and he knows he's self-critical, just like Lando is. He looked back on Barcelona and said, you know, I made a couple of small changes to my setup that I wasn't necessarily happy with, and it didn't play out for me, and that's why I was off the pace. That's why I crashed in Barcelona. You know, that's why I spun, why I made the errors that I did during qualifying. And yeah, I think, as you say, once he gets it all together, there's that rawness to him. I do think he's emotional. I don't think he's emotional in the cockpit. I think he's emotional out of the cockpit. I think he's a kind, thoughtful, decent young man. And but yeah, in the cockpit, like all of them, you know, pull the helmet on, pull the visor down, completely different character in the car. And I loved those moves. I loved watching him race at the weekend. Yeah. I thought it was sensational.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. All right, I have it's not a theory. It's just Max is a canny racing driver. There's not much you can throw at him he hasn't seen. And we talk about the sprint. That move when Lando went past him, it was on the inside into three. He had that incredible DRS put toe. He shot late lunge, went by, clean move, pulled out. You know, only to get re-overtaken. But it was very efficient. And in my opinion, it gave Max the insight into what would happen on race day, on Grand Prix race day, which made it look, when Max started to respond the way he did, that he'd already planned his moves on how he's going to respond. Now, that's just what I was just... It's just I rewatched the sprint highlights last night because it was bugging me that there was a move he pulled on Max, Lando pulled, that I think was, you know, kind of gave the game away on how he was going to be able to go by. Talk me through, from your point of view, the pit stop, the Red Bull mistake, and then in the pits, and then the gap closing and how that unfolded.
It was always going to happen. I think two things were always going to happen. One, Red Bull were going to drop the ball at some point, be it with strategy or pit stops, because they're the best at everything. They, until last weekend, were perfect at everything. And they're, you know, was that great Roger Federer speech a few weeks ago, said, you know, perfection in sport doesn't exist. You know, he's lost more points than he's won, or something like that, or lost, like, I think it was 52% of the points he's ever played. It was always going to happen. So it was surprising that it happened when it did, because you don't expect the Red Bull crew to drop the ball like that. But a sticky gun, a sticky wheel nut, it happens. And then to have to hold him because Lando was coming in, you know, everything just conspired at the wrong moment. And then Max is under pressure and he locks up, and suddenly the gap's coming down, and Lando sees him, can smell him, starts punching in the laps on new tires. And then we're in DRS, and the rest is history. But I do agree with you, mate. And actually, you know, I have my say after the race. And, you know, as always, you get vilified for being biased towards British drivers when you say anything that is negative towards somebody who isn't in a scenario where it's one-on-one. But what, you know, a lot of those people who will sit there and go, oh, you just hate Max Verstappen, miss out, is that for the whole, you know, of the weekend and up to that point, all we've done is praise Max and praise his racecraft, because that move that he put on Lando in the sprint to take back the lead without DRS was absolutely stunning. It was bold, instinctive, just joyful racing to watch. And that's what you want is that kind of racing. But I do agree with you as well that Lando absolutely gave him the complete run plan. You know, the only way I'm going to get past you is a late dive bomb on the inside at turn three. That's my best shot of getting past you. And he showed him his hand. He showed him his cards on Saturday morning. And from that point on, yeah, Max had him covered, completely premeditated, had him covered.
So there we are on whatever lap that was, 63 or something, as they came up. interesting to see how people responded to that, what happened up into turn three. Peter Windsor saying, you know, I analyzed it. He never turned a wheel into Lando. Then you've got, you know, Autosport saying, oh, Max is still immature and things. We're so funny, as media is so funny. It's like, if you pull it off, you're a genius. If you don't, you know, you should go back to the caves. It's quite remarkable, especially at the level they operate at. But Max was responding to Lando's seeking to, you know, positioning of his car in a way that reminded me of the last lap of a championship. Not a run by a champion in control.
And the control thing, that's the huge thing here. And it's not just that one incident. The incident where they came together, where Lando's trying to go around the outsides. We all know the way the track goes there. And Peter's right. Max doesn't change the wheel once he hits the brakes, because he's already set it up, set his car up, pointing in a direction that will run Lando out of road unless Lando goes up onto the curbs, as Max himself had to do in years gone by with other drivers defending that corner. He knows exactly what he's doing. Alex Brundle said that he didn't think that Max had seen that Lando was coming around on the outside. But I would argue that if you don't think Lando's coming on the outside, you no way leave him that much space on the inside. So Max intentionally set his car up, pointing in the direction with Lando coming around the outside, that he knew that he would run Lando out of road. No two ways about it for me. That's how that moment unfolded. But it's the laps before that, I think, have led to the negative reactions following the race. If it had just been that one moment, everyone would have been like, what a shame. And how silly and how unnecessary and, you know. But the fact that Lando's moves up the inside, that Max would go to cover and then jink under braking in a way that he hasn't done in a long time, and in the way that he always used to do when he first came into the sport, I think for those of us, and I include myself in that, that were sort of vociferous in our negative take on Max's antics in that race, it comes for me personally from a place of disappointment, because he had put in such a beautiful race in the sprint. It was stunning. As you said, instinctive, bold, no DRS, just using that glorious racer's brain that Max had to pull that move back and retake the lead from Lando. To then see him revert to the tactics that he used to employ when he first came into the sport, when they changed the rules to stop him from doing those late moves, you're like, dude, what are you doing? You're better than this. Like, you're so much better than this. You don't need, you absolutely do not need to revert to that, to go back to the ways of old, which led to your reputation when you were a younger man, when you were not a world champion, when you were the one that was having to fight to make your name and make your place. You know, I was just disappointed. I was really disappointed to see that. Yep. You could sense Lando's disappointment because you want to fight fair. Okay, Lando sent one and went deep and got the track limits and four track limits. He would have got a penalty anyway. Why Red Bull didn't tell Max, don't fight it too hard, Lando's going to get a penalty anyway? Why didn't they tell him?
That news unfolded, so many mistakes. But I want to go back to what you said about the way Lando was, you know, he was making his moves and Max was responding. When you are so good, and you generally have seen that with Max, when he knows, when he's had overtakes before, maybe because in the, you know, even this year, it's as though, as you do when you have an air of confidence, you know you're going to be able to take them back, right? You're going to go by. I'm going to go by. There were still eight laps to go in the race. It was not the last lap. That's what I can't get over. And he didn't need to do that. So, and Lando, you know, his team are telling him, your tires are better, your tires are newer, make the move, and you know you can pull out. Lando knows that's his playbook now. So it was... there was a sense of obstinacy from, if that's even a word, from both of them as they went up into turn three, because I actually thought Lando was going to dab the brakes again last minute and do the under and over right? Or up and over, or
yeah,
up, however
cut
we say
on the inside. Yeah.
I thought that's what he was going to do. It's, I couldn't believe when he stuck it still on the outside, because I'm going, Maxi's already up there. It's going to be a drag race. Yeah.
I think he just thought he was going to have to try something different, because he tried it on the inside a couple of times. He'd run Max out of road one time, and then, well, you say he'd run him out of road. It was very similar, and Julian Palmer made this comment, and I agree with him. It was very similar to Max's move on Lewis in Abu Dhabi 21, where he did the dive bomb at the inside at the end of the straight, kept it inside the track, and Lewis ran off track and kept the lead by running off track. Mm-hmm. And Max did exactly the same thing in Austria at the weekend. Lando, yes, it was a dive bomb, but he kept everything inside the track, and Max had to run off and kept the lead. That roles reversed. It's Abu Dhabi 21. Max was furious that Lewis kept the lead at Abu Dhabi 21. And I think he was right to be furious that Lewis kept the lead of Abu Dhabi in 21, because that was Max's corner. That was Max's lead, in the early part of that race. It's just as that move from Lando was completely legitimate up there. I've seen a quote from Christian Horner today saying, you know, these two were always going to come to blows at some point. There was always going to be a crash at some point. Maybe there was, but it's come awfully early. And the fact that it's come so soon, and the fact that Max, let's call it what it was desperation. And I haven't seen Max driving with desperation for a very, very long time. Maybe it's because he hasn't been challenged in a very, very long time. But that was not the cool, calm, mature, you know, unflappable 3-time world champion.
No.
That was a guy who was really flustered. And that's not the Max that it's not the Max that I'm used to seeing. It's not the Max that I've seen racing since he won his first world championship. And I think that's what's really surprised everybody, and what's really shocked everybody, and why the reaction to it has in some quarters been, you know, quite as alarmist as it has been, is because people are sitting there going, wait, I thought this kid was done doing this kind of stuff. I left that behind. You know, this is not the 3-time world champion. This is
the old guy. Pre-guy.
Yeah, the old guy.
I think you're right. I mean, we'll close this one out in a second, because I want to move on to their relationship. But you're absolutely right. Maybe that's a sign also team-wide of the acknowledgement that McLaren are the faster car now. I think Max understood that if Lando went by, he would be able to extend a lead on him with the laps remaining on those better tires and his car coming alive in that last phase of the race.
He was like,
no, you're not going to go by. Oh, you're not going to go by. And then they just hit. And it's like, you talk about top athletes. If it was at the back of the field, we'd go, oh, just another couple of guys hit each other.
Yeah.
It's Nadal and Federer, right? It's the two top people. That's why we care.
And what it is as well, I think, is, so it is reflective of 21. Because what it is it's Max laying out his stall. Just as he did when he was fighting Lewis for the world championship. If Red Bull genuinely believe McLaren have the faster car, then we do have a championship fight on our hands this season, because we're not even halfway through the year. So if for the second half of the season McLaren keeps improving, then Max is going to keep having to face off Lando. So this race was his first opportunity, really wheel to wheel with Lando, to be able to say, nah, like, this is how I race, this is how I defend, and if you want to take a win from me, you're gonna have to try a lot harder than this, because I'm not gonna make life easy for you. This was absolutely setting out his stall. You can respect that, you can like that, I totally respect that, but there is a limit. And there is a line on what is allowable under the regulations. And as Lando said, I think as a lot of us have said, you know, we all want to see hard racing, but it's got to be fair. And those jinks under braking, those little late moves to try and put the attacker off, I'm not a fan of those. I'm not a fan of running people out of road. I'm not a fan of jinking under braking, any of that stuff. I want to see the Piastri going around the outside and the Verstappen going around the outside and pulling that move back. You know, that's what you want to, you don't want to see people getting crowded out of road. You don't want to see people coming to blows. You don't want to see people moving under braking. You want hard but fair combat. We had hard combat at the weekend. Was it fair? No. And that's ultimately what needs to get looked at. But again, now Lando goes into the next race and he knows Max isn't going to play fair. So does Lando change the way he races? Or does he have to accept that he's got to now try and do something different? Ooh. And that's the fascinating thing, because that's going to be in his head now. And then it's job done for Max. And Max scored points and Lando didn't. So, you know, it's ultimately a tick for Max. Ultimately, it's a win for Max.
God, you sum things up so well. You're true, so right. But again, you also don't want the potential officiating that could come down the chute to make a driver, any driver, nervous about being an attacking driver. That's the beauty of our sport, those overtakes you just described. You have to have a small grace period, even though the definition of the rules has to be very clear. It's also, you don't want to,
yes.
You've seen drivers when the rules have tightened up. We saw it in IndyCar, we saw it in IMSA and World Sports Cars. Yep. Touring cars, do you remember when British touring cars got so overregulated, no one could overtake anymore? They had to release it a bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You don't want to overregulate it to the point where, as you say, no one attempts an overtake, because, you know, if the onus is on the driver behind to make a clean move, you want to make sure they actually have a move. And you don't want to make it impossible to defend. Like you say, like in IndyCar, like if you don't preempt the move of the driver behind, you can't defend. And you've got to be able to defend, I think. And if Formula One ever goes down that route, I think that would be, you know, that wouldn't be what Formula One's about. You've got to be able to defend. You need to be able to attack. You need to be able to defend. But if somebody sends one on you, then you've either got to get harder on the brakes and up and under, or you've just got to admit, okay, you know, he's done me there, but I'm going to get him back. You can't move under braking. Yeah. That's a cardinal sin, and it always has been.
As long as we stick with that, I think we can still have some amazing racing. Last thing on those two, they have a friendship. That drivers have friendships. It's part of the bond of the solidarity, of the danger, of the risk, especially back in, you know, my dad's day and things like that. There was a risk, a danger. You had to be, you know, colleagues off tracks like fighter pilots and then ruthless on track.
Yeah.
And through social media, we see so much more behind the scenes than we ever did. They fly home together, I think, Max and Lando. I imagine they didn't fly back together on Sunday
night.
Not this
weekend, yeah.
No, but how does that balance out? Do you think they met up in Monaco yesterday and said, listen, we need to have a beer and discuss this? Or do you think it stays in the official channels? How is this balance between friendship and rivalry?
It's a really good question. And listen, I'm not Max, I'm not Lando. I don't know how they're going to deal with it, but it has to be dealt with between themselves. Lando said after the race, it's not for me to go and apologize. It's not for me to make the first move. Max needs to do that. So I think Lando will stick to his guns on that. And if Max makes contact and reaches out, then it's going to have to be with the olive branch of an apology. Mm. But then if we know anything about Max, and if Max genuinely does see Lando as a championship rival and threat, do you think that olive branch will come? Because then he just undoes all of the hard work of laying out his stall on track.
Yeah.
Unless it's a call that says, listen, you're my mate and I love you and it's all good, you know, and I'm sorry that we made contact, but you got to understand that when we are out on track, I'm going to destroy you. Like, I'm not here to be your mate on track. You know, as long as we can be mates off track, recognize that when we put our helmets on, I'm not going to play nice. I'm not going to necessarily play fair. You know, maybe it'll be that. I don't know. Right. I don't know. Lando will probably say, same back to you, sunshine, and let's go.
Yeah. I mean, as Stella said about Norris, you cannot go back on your position on this. Be tough. You cannot be weak at this point. Otherwise, Max wins. you know, and I think that's a
and that's it. And if Max apologizes, then he's being weak. Yeah. So, but we wouldn't even be talking about this if we weren't in the midst. And again, you know, I keep saying it, like, we've got a season. We've got a season. And people are like, no, we don't. The gap's too big. All it takes is a couple of races, a couple of DNFs here or there for Max, and the Drivers' Championship is very much on. Yeah. Like, we've got a season. We've got a championship.
I have so many things I still wanted to talk to you about, but let's just talk about Silverstone because it does incorporate it. So happy for George. That was a pace, you know, he went by. I mean, it's just fun. The Toto on the radio, that's so embarrassing. You're convinced this, George, you know, shut up. You
yeah,
know,
it just, was great. He said it was the stupidest thing he's ever done. Toto said the stupidest thing I've ever done was get on the radio.
Hysterical. But I love that. It shows the human side of it. We never used to be privy to all the radio traffic. Obviously, Lewis and George. Lewis still has that race pace. George was extraordinary in the weekend, and he came through, and I just love the elation he showed. Obviously, the Ferraris, you know, we know they're right there. It, as you say, the gap is so tight. But what do we look like going into Silverstone? We're British, you and I, and Silverstone, even as a kid, I remember just the fan fervor for Nigel Mansell or Damon or then DC, Johnny Herbert, whoever it was that was there, Jensen. We are very proud of our homegrown drivers, as we should be. We have a lot of them in the run this weekend. What is it going to be like? And just tell me how you think Silverstone will unfold.
I think it'll be great. I think we're going to see a lot of orange flags. I think there's going to be a lot of support for Lando Norris this year. There's always been, you know, for two decades, it's been Lewis's home, you know, and that place has roared for Sir Lewis Hamilton. I think there'll be a bit more George support this year, but I expect to see the place go absolutely nuts for Lando. And I think Lando's got the best opportunity of the three Brits for the win. Mercedes might have to do exactly what they did in Austria. George even admitted it himself after qualifying. He said, I'm just going to let these two take care of each other and then I'll just slide on through. It's exactly what he did. I do hope, though, that, you know, given what happened in Austria and given that, you know, we're going into the British Grand Prix this weekend, I hope the British Grand Prix fans are respectful of Max. Whatever he does, whether he wins, whatever, you know, I hope they are respectful of him because he is a brilliant driver. He is a three-time world champion. He is the defining racer of our generation of Formula One. And, you know, yeah, okay, him and Lando made contact, but it doesn't require any disrespect. You know, they're going to get close. They're going to fight. They'll probably make contact again. So just, yeah, I hope the British fans are respectful of Max, as they should be.
Well, we all look forward to it. Well, Will Buxton, it is time for the Mobile One pit stop for the love of driving. My first question is, who will Carlos Sainz sign for in 2025 and beyond?
Oh, mate, if you'd asked me this 2 weeks ago, I would have said Williams. Now I believe the answer is Alpine. Even if they end up having Mercedes engines instead of Renault engines, in fact, probably because they're going to have Mercedes engines instead of Renault engines. Alpine now looks the most likely.
Adrian Newey, would you just go to the beach or would you, if you had to make a decision and you were him, where would you go?
Oh, if I was Adrian, I would go to Ferrari and work with Lewis because at the start of the year, Adrian said, those are the two things that I regret having not done. Get them both ticked off your bucket list. Go and design like a ridiculously amazing road going Ferrari. Take responsibility for taking Ferrari back to the Formula One World Championship with Lewis. That would be, come on, how can you turn that down?
It's a dream. Everyone wants to wear red. Just a question, in the media scrum, who's the easiest driver to talk to?
Ocon is actually really good. I know he doesn't get a lot of love outside of the paddock, but Esteban is amazing. And Esteban is the only driver who will walk around that entire media pen and when you say hello to him, will say hello to you by name. And the first thing he does when he sees somebody new independent he doesn't know, like a new broadcaster or whoever, he'll always go up and talk to them and find out who they, what their name is, where they're from, all of that, and logs it, remembers it, and always refers to everybody by their name. He's, I like Esteban. He's cool. They're all great. But Esteban's super easy to talk to.
Perfect. We all have good and bad days. Who don't you want to cross as a driver when they're on a bad day?
Oh, God. None of them. But particularly Lewis. Because I really like Lewis. And if he's having a bad day and you have to ask him a hard question and he cuts you down, that's getting cut down by Lewis is a hard thing to take.
The biggest winner on Sunday, Drive to Survive with Netflix producers or George Russell?
bit of column A, bit of column B. Mm-hmm.
That's the right answer. When you come back to Vegas, the second time here, what are you most looking forward to for the Grand Prix?
My free room at the Wynn, that clearly will come about as a result of being on this show. The greatest thing about Las Vegas, vending machines full of cake.
On that note, Will Buxton, I've got to say that was brilliant. Mobile One Pit Stop for the Love of Driving. You summed it all up. But I do have something to bring up. Your book, An Illustrated History of Formula One, is released on August 13th here in the United States. Very excited about it. My producer has already ordered it.
Brad Pitt
just said came out. It's the most comprehensive, there it is, most brilliant book, all-encompassing book on Formula One to date. A joy to peruse. That's a very complicated word for a Hollywood guy. He's got a copy and
he wrote himself.
I'm looking around for my copy. Can't see it. What's all this? Brad Pitt over me.
Mate, why are you not on the mailing list? I'll get you on the mailing list.
I love it. Anyway, good luck. It must be so exciting to bring something. And you're actually nailing something I think is really important. Often on this show, I say, use Williams as an example. If you're a modern Drive to Survive fan, you might go, well, Williams, they just screw around in the middle of the field, you know, at the back. Whereas if you are a real Formula One fan with history and lineage, you go, they were one of the most dominating teams in history. There's a lot about this sport that the modern fan needs to know, and I'm excited you're bringing it to them.
Thanks, mate. It's entirely why I wrote it. You know, I want to get us away from the notion of real fans, you know, legacy fans, whatever, this division that exists between people who are just getting into it and people who've been watching it for 30, 40 years. You know, we all had a day where we'd never seen a race. The most experienced journalist in Formula One had a day where they knew nothing. And Stefano Domenicali last year came out with this amazing statistic, which is that 1 in 3 F1 fans, F1 viewers, have been watching for less than 5 years. So they never saw Seb in a competitive car, never saw Michael Schumacher race. How on earth do you learn 75 years of history if all that happens every time you express your love for the sport, you're put down as being a new fan and you're immediately admonished for it? I wanted to write a book that put my arms out and welcomed fans into the sport and said, come with me, let me show you everything from the very start all the way through in a really easy to understand way that's not too complicated, not too like in depth and is going to get boring. It's just really simple. So we go through what the sport is today, and then we go through the 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way through an explanation of what happened in the decades. And then we go through champion by champion, literally every single champion that the sport has ever crowned. So you got Farina.
Brilliant.
Then you go to Fangio. And 400 words on each driver. So it's a 2-minute read per champion all the way through. Then the teams that defined the era, a great race for each decade. And we do that for every single decade all the way through from the 1950s all the way through to the 2020s. And then we have a little look to the future. So, yeah, anyone who's ever won the world championship, a bunch of other drivers of note. I've included one driver from every decade who wasn't a champion but could have been. So just give you a bit of an overview of where Formula One's been in 75 years of history. Because, you know, there's a lot. There's so much to this sport. And I know on the broadcasts, you know, we'll talk about Jim Clark. We'll talk about Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost. And we do that because we just assume that everybody knows who these people are, but I think we often take a lot for granted and forget that there are a huge number of Formula One fans who are just getting into it. So hopefully this book is a means for the new fans to get up to speed with everything that happened in the past, and for those of us who've been watching for years to remind ourselves of some of the great memories of the sport that we've watched over the decades.
I'm really grateful you made that. Brilliant, mate. Well, listen, it's time for bath time, not yours. If anyone catches the last part of the show, I'm not saying Will needs a bath. I'm saying his beautiful child needs a bath. And we'll stay in touch.
Yes, he does.
We'll stay in touch, mate. I really appreciate it. As always, thank you so much.
You're very welcome, mate. Bless you, mate. I'll see you soon.
See you on Sunday. Well, obviously, I appreciate everybody for listening to this podcast, which means probably driving means a lot to you. Now, for me, especially with the Silverstone Grand Prix coming up this weekend, it brings back memories of watching my father, Derek Bell, MBE, racing in the 1,000-kilometer race at Silverstone, one of the epic races on the World Sports Car Championship. And then, just a few short years later, I was driving my Vauxhall Lotus out onto the same track and racing up against the likes of Alan McNeish and Mika Häkkinen. It's crazy what a difference a few years makes, but definitely one of the tracks that cemented in my mind. But you see, I've always had that love of driving, and that is what Mobil 1 is all about. It's a reminder that even when life starts to feel too full of screens and routines, the ultimate escape is waiting patiently in your driveway. Mobil 1, for the love of driving. Visit loveofdriving.us/drive to win to learn more. Well, yes, the British Grand Prix, it is actually the spiritual and physical home of Formula One racing. First held in 1926 by the Royal Automobile Club, the British Grand Prix has been held annually since 1948 and has been a round of the FIA World Championship every year since 1950. The British Racing Driver Club, the BRDC, is the club that owns and runs, operates the track, and I'm actually a very proud member. You have to achieve something in racing or contribute to motorsports to be a part of it. It's definitely one of those clubs that brings you a lot of pride and joy, and when you watch the Grand Prix this weekend, just when they come into the pit lane entrance, you look to the right, and often the commentators bring attention to it. That is the BRDC suite. Unfortunately, I can't make it this weekend. But when you think about the history of BRDC, I mean, of Silverstone, Ferrari are the winningest manufacturer here with 18 wins, and Lewis has won an amazing 8 times. I did mention with Will, of course, that the hometown heroes have always galvanized the crowd to this frenzy, and this weekend, I think it's going to be even on another level. And I think Will was also very correct to say, just be respectful. Max and Lando, that was a conflict that shouldn't extend and spill over into the next race. Just appreciate the brilliance of the man and anticipate the kind of race that we're about to have. It is one of those tracks, though, that will have a tremendous load through the tires. And those corners, those opening sequence, the way, especially when they have the helicopter shot, going through those opening few 4 or 5 corners, it's electrifying, maybe the highest alternating G-force that a Formula One driver will ever experience, which means the cars are going through so much as well. So look for a lot of tire deg, tire management, which of course creates opportunities. The million-dollar question is, of course, what will happen with Lando and Max? I think it's definitely going to be they found a way around resolving this conflict going into the race. Maybe they can be friends off track. Maybe they can be rivals on it. That's for sure. But let's just hope they settle it mano a mano and bring us a brilliant spectacle. My bet for the weekend is actually going to be a bit unusual, and I can't wait to see what Jeremiah thinks about this because he is the betting man. I reckon the podium will be Lando, then Oscar, then Max. I just think that they are going to, as a pairing, be able to beat the Red Bull over the course of the race all the way to the end. I think Oscar is going to just be on even the next notch up on his performance ladder, and I think they can beat Max. I think that's my... So it's Lando, Oscar, and Max for me. Let's just see how we do when we come out the other side. Well, everyone, until then, enjoy this weekend. It's going to be spectacular. My home track is going to definitely bring its best game. I can't wait. Thank you very much to Will Buxton for joining me. As always, he's brilliant. In fact, he should probably be in my seat. He's so good at it. Of course, a huge thank you to the Wynn Las Vegas for their great hospitality and support of the show, and to Mobil 1 for the love of driving. Can't wait to see you next week.